It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Later in the hour, we'll talk with a man who's a cartoonist, and one cartoon got him fired after over 20 years of producing the cartoons. We'll find out about that in our second half hour. But first, in the last 5 years, 22 bicyclists have been killed by motor vehicles on Iowa's roadways. And most of the drivers were charged in those bike deaths, but almost all received a fine, no jail time. This first half hour, we want to hear about one of those fatal collisions in particular that involved a driver who was texting. Also, about what some say is a failure of Iowa law when it comes to protecting bicyclists. That's why we want to reach out to our listeners this hour and ask you, bicyclists, do you feel safe on Iowa's roads? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave a comment or a question. Let's talk first of all with Mackenzie Elmer, a breaking news reporter with the Des Moines Register, who's been covering this issue in our Des Moines studio. Hello, Mackenzie.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Tell us, how were you first interested in covering this issue? What happened?
Well, this is an issue that came to light through, actually, Kyle Munson, one of our columnists, wrote a story about what's the cost of a bicyclist's life. And we wanted to look at that on a larger scale. So the Register has been working on a series called Iowa Biking in Iowa, Welcome or Not. And so this was just a piece that I wanted to investigate to see if, on a larger scale, are drivers getting charged? What are they getting charged with, and how far are they prosecuted in these cases?
Okay, so you've been looking into these cases for the last 6 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
What have you found? What penalties does the get imposed on drivers who have killed cyclists?
Right. Well, in the 21 cases that I looked at from the past 5 years, bicycle versus car fatalities, 13 drivers were charged. And the majority of those were getting charged with a traffic violation or a $250 fine, mostly for something like unsafe passing, operating too close to a cyclist, or failure to stop at a safe distance from a cyclist. And so that's pretty much what we found. And we kind of expected that a little bit because we knew a little bit about the types of violations that were out there, and that's kind of just something we wanted to explore in greater detail.
So. Mm-hmm. One of the cases of these 21 that we want to focus on right now is the case of Grace Harkin, a young woman who was killed in Iowa. We want to hear a little bit of the audio from a video posted by the Des Moines Register in connection with this story. But first of all, tragic case. Give us the basics, please.
Yeah, well, Grace... She was a young Riceville woman, and she was getting into cycling. She was recovering from a hip injury, and so she was very active and wanted to ride her bicycle more often. And so I think it was only the fifth time she hopped on her bike after work in Osage and took a county road east towards her home, followed closely by her father and sister, who were in a car behind them. And just about minutes later, she was hit by a driver who admitted to she was texting at the time that she hit Grace.
Also a young woman was the driver,
yes,
not to confuse things, but yeah. Okay.
Yes, a 23-year-old, mm-hmm. Courtney Johnson. And Courtney's father, Daryl, Grace's father, found her on the side of the road just shortly after the crash. She was the first on the scene, so it was quite a tragic story.
Yeah, let's listen to some audio. It lasts a couple of minutes. Not easy to listen to. This is Grace's father, Grace Harkin's father, talking about the accident, how it occurred. Audio from a video by the Des Moines Register that was produced by Brian Holgrave. Let's have a listen.
All of a sudden, I become alert, and I flick my seat up, not thinking of Grace whatsoever, neither one of us. We just weren't thinking that way at all. And so I'm alert, and I'm looking around, looking up, and we're having a good get into the center of the road because there's cars lined up. And Grace was laying there, and I still didn't recognize her. And she really wasn't beat up bad. But so I see somebody with a face away, hair, and I didn't recognize her. I just said, Hannah, pull up. There's somebody hurt really bad back there. Let's go see if they got phones. So she pulls up ahead. We get out of the car. Hannah said, "Dad, it's Grace." Because she could see her stuff in the ditch. I went running up there, slid in the gravel right next to her, yelling her name.
Our friend Betsy came over and she said, "Christine, Hannah is trying to get a hold of you. Grace has been in a bike accident." Went by the accident scene and I saw the car. I just never, ever thought that Grace had been killed.
She meant Grace no harm, and I know that. But, you know, there's a lot of other accidents that can happen out there, and I guess I think, why wouldn't involuntary manslaughter be part of hitting somebody when you text, as well as drunk driving or firearm going off?
Father and mother there, we heard their voices of the late Grace Harkin, who was killed in the accident described there. Mackenzie Elmer covering this for the Des Moines Register. What year did this happen? When?
This happened, I think, last year.
Mm-hmm. 2015.
Yeah, 2015.
Let's talk with Aaron Murphy, also in the studio there with you. Aaron Murphy, Assistant Mitchell County Attorney, prosecuting the driver who hit Grace Harkin. Aaron Murphy, welcome to the program. Aaron, are you there?
I'm here.
Now I can hear you. Very good. So when you were assigned this case and started researching how to prosecute the driver, what did you find?
Well, let me start off by, you know, I want to point out that the charges are still pending in this case. So they haven't come on for trial yet. And Ms. Johnson certainly is entitled to presumption of innocence. Nothing's been proven in court against her yet. So I want to be careful about, you know, whether we state things as, you know, what's fact and what isn't. What I will say is when this case came to me, as far as I can remember, I've been up here almost 20 years. I think this is the first case I had involving a bicyclist being killed. I've dealt with vehicular homicide by vehicle cases. I've tried those cases to juries, but I think this is the first time I dealt with the case with the bicyclist. And so, you know, without you know, it was at the time the case came to me, you know, I at that point I wasn't really making a judgment as to, because you can get into different philosophical debates about, you know, what should happen to a person that does this, and I think, you know, I can see arguments on both sides of how severe the treatment should be, but what I was trying to figure out initially was what are the options that are available to me as a prosecutor.
Okay, what are the options?
And as I saw it, one of the things I started to think about was like homicide by vehicle. Was that an option? I'm not saying whether it was fair or not the prosecutor, but was it an option? If you drive drinking and you're drunk and you kill somebody, it's homicide by vehicle. So I looked at that and I came to the conclusion that, you know, there was nothing involved in, you know, no drugs or alcohol are alleged in this case at all. So that takes that off the table. So you're going to look at whether or not, for example, you could have homicide by vehicle because of recklessness. And so you start to think about that because you think, well, if we could prove texting while driving, could that be recklessness?
Mm-hmm.
And in doing my research, and I had dealt with these issues of recklessness before, so I knew it was kind of a high standard, but I'd never, like I said, I don't think I'd ever dealt with it in the context of texting while driving. But as I got to just looking at the case law, I don't know that I found anything directly on point involving texting, but it became apparent to me that my interpretation was, gee, I don't think under the law texting while driving would rise to the level of recklessness.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, sometimes people will say, well, put it in front of a jury and let a jury figure it out. Well, usually in these cases, there's going to be a judge beforehand deciding whether or not the preliminary facts or basics have even been met. And I kind of concluded, you know, from my review of the case law, I don't think we're going to get to recklessness.
Mm-hmm.
And yet,
this is texting, like drinking alcohol, is something we know distracts you as a driver, makes you a much worse driver. Texting, I think studies say you 20 times more likely to be in an accident if you're texting while driving.
Yeah.
So they're both willful acts, drinking and texting. So
right.
Why not recklessness in both
right.
cases?
And so as I read that, you know, or as I did my research, I did reach out in county attorney's offices, we have the good fortune of we have an attorney general's office in the state that that's always available to us. We can reach out to them. They're good about trying to help us answer because they have a lot of experts there that deal with complicated issues a lot. I did reach out to somebody, and I'm just asking, you know, do you think I'm right here? I mean, I'm not saying whether or not this young lady should necessarily be charged with vehicular homicide. What I'm trying to figure out is it a case that's even eligible to be brought? And I think my conclusions were kind of confirmed that, you know, I don't think you're going to rise to that level of recklessness.
Okay. We're running short of time. Aaron Murphy, tell us again the status of this case right now. Have charges been filed?
Charges have been filed. She's been charged with texting while driving, causing a death, and basically failure to yield to a bicycle.
Which will maximum penalty for both of those?
Well, it looks to me that the texting while driving, normally, for example, that would just be a $30 fine with surcharge and cost to be a total of $100. I don't think there's any jail time. However, since there is a fatality or an alleged fatality in this case, there can be some enhanced penalties. And my understanding of those penalties is that can be a fine of $1,000 or suspension of a driver's license for not more than 180 days or both. My understanding is there cannot be jail time.
Okay. Aaron Murphy with us, Assistant Mitchell County Attorney, talking about a case of a bicyclist who was killed by a driver who was texting. He's prosecuting the driver. This case is ongoing. Certain things he can't talk about right now. Pete Grady is with us as well. Pete Grady, Assistant Attorney General for the state of Iowa. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Ben.
So listening to this conversation, what do you want to add here when we try to figure this out? A tragedy all the way around. No doubt the driver who was texting while driving, has had her life changed in an awful way, too.
Well, one of the first things I want to say is that Aaron is to be congratulated. He exercised probably the most important ethical obligation that a prosecutor can exercise, and that is don't charge a case if you can't prove it. And that's very significant. That's a very gutsy call in a situation like this because you've got such a tragedy. You've got such a powerful act that occurs in a community and just causes us all to stand back and say what has happened and what can be done. But I think he's correct on the law. The Iowa law on recklessness, proving recklessness in Iowa, is one of the highest hurdles that you can possibly see in the law. And as a consequence, it's easier to prove causing death by drunk driving or causing death by eluding or causing death by drag racing than it is to cause death in any other way using a motor vehicle, because we have such a high standard for recklessness. And let me add now while I'm at it, texting, we all know that that's very dangerous. We all know that there's studies out there that compare texting to impaired driving. And yet in Iowa, our texting law is such that if a law enforcement officer is driving next to you on the interstate and you are texting your little life away, as long as you're not committing any other offense, the law enforcement officer cannot stop you because we have what is known as a secondary enforcement law for texting. So when you take a look at that and you ask yourself, well, how serious is texting if the legislature says it's not even serious enough to require that somebody be pulled over when it's observed by a law enforcement officer? I think Aaron made the correct, the incredibly difficult, but the correct call on going forward with simple misdemeanors, schedule violations, rather than filing an indictable offense that, frankly, unfortunately, where the law is today would not be supported.
Right. And Pete Grady, you are enforcers of the law, not makers of the law. Perhaps the legislature needs to look at this again. We have to remember this year's session of the Iowa legislature, biking advocates tried to enhance the state's bicycle safety laws by pushing a bill that would have required drivers to fully change lanes when passing cyclists. The bill would have enhanced the penalty for killing a cyclist to $1,000. That did not go any further. It died in the Republican-controlled House. A lot of feedback here we want to get to from our listeners, 1-866-780-9100. But back to you, Mackenzie Elmer. We're not just focusing on this one case, as tragic as it is, but you looked at 21 cases in the past 5 years, fatalities here. How would you characterize most of them? The circumstances, is it very often that you're run down from behind as Grace Harkin was in 2015?
Yeah, a lot of these occurred on paved county roads. A lot of cyclists, I believe, who were probably out for an exercise-type ride. Some themes, I guess, that we noticed were just that, maybe a car trying to pass the cyclists or a group of cyclists and just there at the wrong time or other circumstances. Maybe there's a case, a 13-year-old Timothy Jenks up in Ames. He was cycling with a group. I think they're preparing for like a triathlon, and it just so happened the car decided to pass the group, actually following what the advocates wanted in this safe passing bill by using the opposite lane. However, she passed in a no passing zone, and at that same moment, Timothy fell. He overcorrected his bicycle and fell into the lane and was hit by the driver. So that bill wouldn't necessarily have affected that situation, but it's another case of just a driver not following a traffic law and just not taking the time or slowing down and waiting until, you know, it was safe to pass.
And in all of these, I'm sure you've found cases where the bicyclists were acting perhaps recklessly as well. We don't have to drive around very far in our communities to find bicyclists ignoring a lot of laws of the road, right?
Right. Some cyclists, there were some cases where the driver wasn't charged due to the cyclist not following. For instance, there was a case in 2012 where a cyclist went through a four-way stop sign or stop sign at a four-way stop in an intersection and was hit. Sometimes the cyclist is wearing dark clothing, cycling at night, and those drivers aren't charged in the cases I've studied. Or sometimes even environmental circumstances where there's a case in southeast Iowa, actually the most recent case, where the glare of the setting sun was determined to be the factor in the crash. So it can be a wide range of things that affect these decision to charge or not.
Mm-hmm. We want to get to callers in just a minute, but I know Pete Grady, Assistant Attorney General for the state, has to leave here at the halfway point. We're going to go a little bit into our next half hour. But Pete, any thoughts you wanted to leave us with in this conversation?
The only thing I would say is that we've had, just looking at things quickly, we had bills filed in 2015, 2011, 2008. And we haven't had any movement on bicycle safety laws in any of those sessions of the legislature. So to the extent that anything can occur in terms of bicycle safety, we need to applaud and encourage the activities of bicycle groups that are attempting to resolve this issue. And then, frankly, I would like to see the legislature address the issue of recklessness.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I misspoke. You can stay with us a little bit longer. Let's go to some callers here. Doug is with us from Des Moines. Doug, what's your angle on this conversation?
Well, I was a little disappointed when I heard the prosecutor speaking about recklessness. What I wondered about was negligence.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm in my driveway and I back over my neighbor's three-year-old, I would think, I'm not a lawyer, but I would think I could be charged with negligent homicide. Add to that, if I was texting while that happened, there's an additional distraction there. So where is the discussion about the other forms of charges that I would think could be filed? And he didn't mention that. And I thought,
Okay.
May I jump in?
Doug, yeah, of course. We're coming up on a break, so we do want to get an answer. Thank you, Doug, so much for your question from Des Moines. Who's jumping in here?
This is Pete.
Pete, great.
We don't have a negligent homicide statute in Iowa. There is no such thing. Negligent wrongful death actions are handled in the civil courts. We do not have negligent homicide. All involuntary manslaughter, all vehicular homicide by reckless behavior requires recklessness as the middle element, and therefore we cannot drop down to a negligence standard.
Mm-hmm. Do other states have such laws, criminals laws?
Some states do. It's comparing apples and oranges because they – The language that they use words like culpable. Well, culpable in Iowa rarely includes negligent behavior. I mean, have we looked at a negligent homicide statute? Yes. Has there been anyone willing to bite on that as something to go forward? No.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Doug, did that give you your answer in Des Moines?
Yeah, thank you for clearing that up. I had no idea that we were like that.
Okay. Doug in Des Moines, thanks for calling. 1-866-780-9100. We're going to take a short break and come back. We're talking about bike safety, bike fatalities more specifically. Mackenzie Elmer of the Des Moines Register is with us. She's looked at, for the past half year or so, looked at cases, 21 fatalities, bike fatalities involving cars in the last 5 years, sort of looked at the themes there and perhaps drawing out of it. We're talking with Pete Grady, Assistant Attorney General for the state, and Aaron Murphy, Assistant Mitchell County Attorney, what lessons we can draw and if it points us in the direction of better laws that our lawmakers need to answer for. 1-866-780-9100. We're going to talk with our cartoonists in second half hour as well. No worries there. But we're going to spend a few more minutes with this and get to some of our callers. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Back in just a few minutes. And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. This first part of the program talking about bike safety and bike fatalities. In the past 5 years, this is unbelievable, 22 bicyclists have been killed by motor vehicles on Iowa's roadways. So we're talking about what some say is a failure of Iowa law when it comes to protecting bicyclists. Mackenzie Elmer has been reporting on this for the Des Moines Register. She's with us. Aaron Murphy, Assistant Mitchell, a county attorney, is with us, prosecuting a driver who hit a young woman and was killed last year. Pete Grady, Assistant Attorney General for the state of Iowa. We only have a very few minutes. We're going to move on here, but we did want to carry this on to get some listener input before we go. Patrick posted this comment on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Most roads, writes Patrick, weren't constructed to accommodate cyclists, yet they're to be considered a vehicle the same as motorists. I never feel safe when following the rules the way I should, and it's mostly because most motorists don't realize that I am following the rules. I've gotten shouted at countless times to get out of the road, to get on the sidewalk, etc., and the concept of a cyclist staying in the right of a through lane next to a turn lane seems to make heads explode. I think the main issue is that a majority of people simply don't realize cyclists have all the rights and restrictions of motorists, that they are not to be considered pedestrians. Let's go to callers. I'm going to ask all the callers we try to get on here in rapid succession to please be succinct and concise. We don't have much time, but please do make your point. Robin in Mason City.
Yeah, I'm a long-time cyclist, and I do a lot of riding on the local roads here. And one thing I like to tell cyclists or automobile drivers is to really give us a whole lane when they pass. they don't pass motorcycles with half of their vehicle in the motorcycle's lane.
Right.
And if they would just do that, they would help us out a lot. We get bothered by wind from the vehicles passing us at speed. We have to avoid potholes and things like that, and they just don't realize that we're much more susceptible to wind and things like that. So if they give us the full lane, that's really all we're really asking.
Right, Robin, and that's what the legislature, the biking advocates wanted to change in our law, to make that a law. If you didn't do that, it would be susceptible to a $1,000 fine. But thanks for your point, Robin.
Mm-hmm.
And
thank you.
Let's go to Tim in Des Moines. Tim, what do you have to say on this topic?
Well, I was responding earlier to the discussion, or kind of the framing of the discussion, as a philosophical discussion. And the basis of any good philosophy is logic. And the fact that somebody is traveling at 50 to 60 miles an hour, which is an average speed for a county road, and texting, and this isn't defined as reckless, defies, you know, my sense of logic. And I think even if that bar seems to be high, that a precedence needs to be set, and the reckless driving should be gone after, because it defies my sense of logic that it isn't reckless.
I'm right with you, Tim. You and I and all other drivers have noticed people texting, driving, texting, doing the darndest things in their cars and texting, driving, and you think, how can that be that you think you're a safe driver? Pete Grady, and you're saying we perhaps need to review this with our law.
Yeah, it used to be that we said that someone was reckless if they engaged in conscious behavior that was creating an unreasonable risk of harm, and the risk was known or should be known to the person who was acting. Then, in about 2001, we changed the standard. So we have all of that, and now we also have to say, and we know that harm probably will flow from the act. So you not only engage in behavior that is very risky and dangerous to lots and lots and lots and lots of people, but you have to, at the same time, not only anticipate that some harm could occur, but know that it probably will occur. And that's where recklessness has, I think, reached the point where it's almost impossible to prove. I don't think anybody would define reckless behavior as requiring a better than 50% outcome for danger or harm if we were just sitting around talking.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the standard that we have now in Iowa.
Okay. Amaris posting on our Facebook page, I commute by bike every day as well as bike race. I rarely feel safe on the road commuting through town. Through years of experience, I have learned to predict what unsafe and or illegal things cars will do to pass. Generally, most drivers are respectable, but I experience unsafe encounters on almost a daily basis. It only takes one angry or distracted driver to do irreparable harm, and that's what you found out in your looking at these 21 fatalities on bikes, Mackenzie Elmer, right?
That's right, and I had done another story on crash data, looking at that, and we found that there are 4,000 crashes in a decade, about 40 a year, and many of them with incapacitating injuries, and about 73% of those crashes occur on municipal roads, especially at intersections. So I think that that's a true behavior, a true thought of a lot of cyclists, that they feel unsafe generally mm-hmm. as they're cycling around.
That's our last caller, Leonard in Des Moines. Leonard, what do you have to add here?
Yeah, actually, I'm startled that there's only been 21 fatalities, given the fact that especially during the summer, hardly a week goes by but some bicycle pilot doesn't blow through a stop sign in front of me.
Right. We've all seen it.
Mm-hmm. I ran one guy down and yelled at him, and he said, well, you people driving pickups are just trying to kill bicycles. And I said, as a matter of fact, I have two fairly expensive bicycles, too.
Mm-hmm. So you're a bicyclist, and you want to say bicyclist?
Yeah. Would start enforcing the traffic laws on bicycle riders, and then I think it would be a lot safer.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched a guy one day go through the stoplight at 6th and University without even slowing down.
Yeah.
In fairness, that's a really good way to get taken out of the gene pool.
Okay. Leonard, thank you very much. In Des Moines, undoubtedly fault on both sides. But we're wrapping up this conversation. And Mackenzie Elmer, anything else you wanted to add? I know we've spoken on this program concerning this topic with Mark Wyatt of the Iowa Bicycle Coalition. He was unable to join us today, but you've spoken with him for your stories on bike safety and bike fatalities. What is the Bike Coalition strategy and the efforts to try to change Iowa law?
Yeah, I've asked him about, you know, whether anyone was pursuing advocacy on this reckless driving issue, whether they were looking to change those laws. And Mark had said, you know, they'd looked at trying to increase penalties, increase jail time, looking at that side of the law. And it just didn't seem to work in this political climate where people are looking to just lower jail time in general for offenders. So advocates are now just trying to look at the operation part, the traffic safety part, and education of drivers. And so that's, I think, what the Safe Passing Bill is trying to do. And I think that they've done a good job getting the word out about safe passing in the state, at least this past session. And I think they're going to continue that next year and pick up the bill again.
Thank you, Mackenzie Elmer, breaking news reporter with the Des Moines Register. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Aaron Murphy, thank you. Assistant Mitchell County Attorney, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Pete Grady, Assistant Attorney General for the state of Iowa. We appreciate your thoughts as well.
Thank you, and thank Mackenzie for the spotlight you're putting on this issue.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.